Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to www.rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The woman who fought for the right to wear a niqab during her Canadian citizenship ceremony took the oath last Friday with her face veiled. Zunaira Ishaq is from Pakistan and has been in Canada since 2008. She put her citizenship ceremony on hold last year in order to ask the federal court to judge the legality of the 2012 conservative policy requiring her to remove her niqab to take the oath. Zunaira Ishaq's stand on the wearing of the niqab was the focus of a heated debate amongst the leaders of the three major parties during the first French language debate on September 24th. Since then, the issue has been front and center in the election campaign, with politicians and commentators of all stripes weighing in on when and indeed whether Muslim women should veil themselves in public. Itrat Syed is a PhD candidate at SFU. She also teaches women's studies at Langara College, and she joins me by phone this morning to talk about the debate around the niqab. Hello, Itrat.
Hi.
What was your reaction when the issue of the niqab came up in the debate a month ago?
I think it was my initial reaction was, oh, here we go again. This is just yet another cycle where Muslim women's bodies become the subject of these very gendered, racialized tropes and are used for political gains.
Now, some people say Harper's attack on the niqab has backfired him and Canadians are outraged. Others say the majority of Canadians support him. What's your sense of it all as this whole debate has sort of hotly unfolded?
Well, in terms of the election, I think it's anybody's guess at this point, and I guess we'll find out Monday night. But he does seem to have made gains in Quebec because of this, and I think that's linked to a longer history in Quebec around these issues. But I think I'm getting both. So, like, I'm obviously around people who are not that fond of racism and can smell it. And so I'm reading a lot of things and hearing from a lot of people who are totally appalled and totally opposed to Harper's use of this this trope. But I'm also seeing a lot of things in the media that are reinforcing some of these things. And I think the lasting legacy of this might be that these kinds of racist ideas become normal. This conversation becomes more and more normal.
One of the things that's interesting to me is that, obviously Harper, but others have kind of positioned it as a feminist issue. And on the other hand, you had, I believe it was yesterday, 500 community leaders, women, coming out and saying this is ridiculous.
And I was really pleased to see that, because that hasn't always happened from mainstream feminists. We've seen historically that often mainstream feminists have been pulled into these debates, and we definitely saw that in the lead-up in the U.S. to the invasion of Afghanistan, where feminist organizations were really whipped up into a conversation about Muslim women's bodies needing to be liberated by the state. So it was great to see that in Canada. But I think that the real issue is that it is about women's autonomy over their bodies, and women need to be able to be understood to be adults, have agency and to have control over their bodies.
There's also been an increase in attacks on Muslim women, particularly we saw that in Quebec. What have you seen out there?
Yeah, and there's civil rights organizations, particularly NCCM, and if you go to their website and you sign up to their email list, they do a very meticulous counting of every attack on a Muslim person in Canada, every act of vandalism against a Muslim institution in Canada, like a mosque or a school, et cetera. And there's definitely been a marked rise in that. The two publicized events that we've heard a lot about were the woman in Montreal and the mom with her kids in Toronto. So we, and those, I think we have to understand that that kind of, that this is a clear consequence of the whipping up of this hate rhetoric, of the othering of Muslims, of the constant sort of talking about Muslim women's bodies in the media.
I think to many people, this kind of hate mongering is also, it's very distressing to kind of see this kind of the flames fan during the election, obviously for political gain. As a Muslim woman who can be, I understand that you wear a hijab and so you would be identified. What's your sense of your experience in the community given this phenomenon?
So watching the debate, like seeing three white men sit there and sort of talk about Muslim women's bodies was incredibly alienating, incredibly offensive. However, I'm going to say that what I'm experiencing is sort of what I experienced right after 9/11, which is sort of a rise in hate crimes, a rise in sort of racism, but also at the same time, there's been an increase of people trying to catch your eye, just like when you're walking down the street or getting on a bus or whatever, people trying to catch your eye and smile. And I think that's important to also talk about, because I think in that moment what people are doing is that they know that there's a racist wind at work, and they want to catch your eye and to distinguish themselves from that. And I think we need to really honor that as well.
What do you think about how Tom Mulcair and Justin Trudeau have responded to the niqab issue? Let's start with Trudeau.
Okay, so one of the things I want to say is that there's a lot of talking about Muslims in this election cycle. And we haven't really heard that much from Muslims. And this sort of talking about us and sort of people debating whether we're good enough to be in the country or not good enough to be in the country is kind of still a little alienating. So Trudeau's position has been, he sort of used his, used Harper's sort of racist electioneering and played off of it and tried to talk about the politics of fear. And that has actually been really great. However, I think we need to remember that he's the one who also voted for Bill C-51. And we can't forget that. And that, and Bill C-51 is really tied up into this discourse. And with Mulcair, I would say that he's come out pretty solidly against the this conversation around the niqab and voted against C-51 and has committed to revoking or repealing C-24. And so that's great. However, the language used was not ideal, I think. The language used around this was also like, well, these poor women, the best thing we can do for them is to give them citizenship. And in that is still an infantilization of Muslim women, which is really at the core of how this discourse works. It's about stripping Muslim women of agency, and it kind of reflects the classic trope that women of color and third world feminists have been talking about, which is the idea of the classic colonial trope of white men saving brown women from brown men.
What do you make of the media coverage of the issue?
It's been intense. Part of it is just, it's kind of blown out of perspective, and that's the thing that I think needs to be understood of what's going on. Because there have been two Muslim women who cover their faces who wanted to take the citizenship oath with their faces covered, both of whom agreed to identify themselves to a female official. This seems like not enough to create a moral panic that of which the state has to, like, intervene in this massive way. So I think the media coverage around it is sort of is out of proportion to the actual issue, like, as is this entire political discourse is completely out of proportion to the actual issue.
Which I guess makes one ask the question if it's, because factually, as you say, it really isn't much of it. It's a, you know, a speck of an issue in Canada in the face of many other issues. So you have to wonder, you know, when you sort of, I guess, pick at that scab, what's underneath that? Why are we seeing such a reaction?
Well, I think that there's, first of all, a lot of slippage in this conversation about niqab. There's a slippage in this conversation between that and issues around headscarves. often known in the media as hijab. But at the core of that is this idea of these are symbols of this othered culture that doesn't represent the values of what Harper called old stock Canadians. So the actual number of women who this affects is small, but it affects all of us in the sense of the way in which, and by us I mean everyone in Canada, that it affects us all in terms of how the racist trope is being deployed.
Is it really about the niqab? Is it about something else?
No, I don't think it is about the niqab per se. I think it's about the visible expression of otherness and the need to draw a line between a here and a there and an us and a them. And I think these moral panics, which we have seen, and moral panics are just these temporarily contained moments of media crisis around, in this case, around Muslim bodies that are always racialized, always gendered. I think that we've seen these consistently across Europe, across North America, in Australia. And I think that at the core of this, it's not the niqab. It's about the distinguishing of an us and a them.
Oh, I want to turn just briefly to another kind of related issue here. What are your thoughts on the Barbaric Practices Hotline?
Yeah, well, I think that is, firstly, hilarious. And I want to say one of the things about it that I've found really interesting and throughout this debate is the social media response. So on Twitter, people talking, using the hashtag of Barbaric Cultural Practices to point out the particular offenses of the Harper's conservative government. There's been a lot of really great social media sort of public responses of trying to take the power out of these kinds of actions, and that's been great. The tip line itself is deeply problematic because there still is 911 in all cities in Canada, right? Like, if there is a crime that you see, you can call the police. So there's actually no purpose of this. It doesn't fill any kind of actual legal or policing need. The only thing it does is highlight or take up a space or become a focal point for racist action and a way of, like, an outlet for racist fears. And so, like, I can imagine, outside of the way that it's being talked about being used by political activists to kind of, take the power out of it, but it could also be used by just random racists confused by the otherness of their neighbor who they, instead of talking to and getting to know, will just be calling this hotline.
Now, Itrata, I imagine that the niqab debate will disappear after election results come in on Monday night. Do you think there will be lasting impacts for Muslim women and men as well?
Yes. Unfortunately, I think there will be a lasting impact, and there has been consistently. Every time this has happened in Canada, and it's been sort of cyclical and consistent, that there's these moments of moral panic, something gets left behind. The bar shifts, and it's some kinds of conversations, some kinds of discourses become more normal. They become entrenched. Some racist ideas become more acceptable in polite conversation. It's more acceptable to be seen in the media constantly. So that is the lasting effect. And I think they're cumulative, and they kind of build upon each other.
Well, I really appreciate your joining us this morning, Itrats. It's been great having you talk with us about this.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Itrat Saeed. She's a PhD candidate at SFU. She also teaches women's studies at Langara College.